Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Kyle and Patrick's still yet to be named podcast. I am Patrick McEwen, but also know me as the Lacrosse Film Room guy, and I am joined once again by my co-host, Kyle Devitt, who is the Inside Lacrosse Gear and Lifestyle Editor.
What up, everyone? We back. We're here. We're happy.
We are here. We're still waiting on that podcast name. Did we give up on trying to sell that?
Yeah, I think the sell is that we don't have a name. Right? That's like our... Okay. And it's also... It gives us a nice little banter at the beginning of the show. It's now become part of us.
What we also need, I was thinking, is we need a headphone sponsor. We record in separate locations. So we record this with microphones and headphones. And I think that we could talk about how comfortable the headphones we're wearing for the podcast. You know, if somebody wanted to hook us up with some nice ones.
Yeah, I have Bose headphones and they're falling apart a little bit right now. So if someone else wanted to come in and replace those, I wouldn't say no.
I wouldn't say no either. I am not going to specify what headphones I have, but they're not very expensive ones. So most likely it would be pretty easy to upgrade them. But anyways, I think the first thing that we wanted to talk about is, I guess, as it always is, whenever East Coast Dives releases something new, is kind of the big gear news, is Vortex Mesh.
Yes. Which is a nice segue into my mea culpa from last week, where I kind of went off on Performance Mesh being kind of the root of all evil in lacrosse. It's not... I think I made some good points, but at the same time, I went a little far.
No, if kids are out there restringing their heads every 2 weeks, like throughout the season, like on a regular basis, I don't know if it's the root of all evil, but it's the root of that evil.
Yeah, I mean, those kids are usually on the bench, though. So, like, you know, lacrosse makes a lot of money through the bench. You know what I mean? They really do.
That's very true. It's one of those things. I think the more that you get to know pro lacrosse players, you realize how few of them actually have any clue how to string their own sticks, because chances are they spent all their time practicing and not learning how to string.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. But anyway, my apologies are out to those companies in particular. With my wallet, I have purchased some mesh from some of the people I have disparaged, and I think everything's all right in the world. But I tell you, I bought a piece of this Vortex mesh, man, and I was like expecting not to like it.
Just to be honest, it's made the same stuff as Hero. Hero's soft for me, even the semi-hard is a little soft.
But I strung this up in what is my, you know, favorite head right now on the market, the Maverick Centric U, and
I also want to mention that's who we need to sponsor. If you're just going to mention this, your favorite head, whenever you talk about gear, we should just be the Maverick Centric podcast.
Yeah, but like, here's the thing: like, it's honest though. I don't use it because it's free. I use it because for me, it works best. And I'm sure I could say that about a bunch of heads that I would try, but I know with the Centric, I don't have to try to get something in it.
But that's why they would make the perfect sponsor, though.
They would.
That's the ideal sponsor relationship, is when you would use it anyway.
Ideally, they will just send me one after hearing this, but we'll see. They are based in New Hampshire. No big deal.
Yeah, we got a... Who's up there? Isn't Billy Bitters their guy up in that part of the
world?
He
is, as well as Jeff Legg. And old favorite Ryan Demarest also works for Cascade, but they're in Liverpool, New York. Anyway, strung up a Centric U with this Vortex mesh, semi-hard. My original pattern didn't take right away. I use a stacked SI right after I locked down five diamonds, so that didn't really work. The one thing about the Vortex mesh is it works better when you string singles in it instead of doing any funky, you know, complicated knots or stacks or triples or doubles. So all I did was just transition my stacked SI into several singles down the side to make my pocket. And man, it really is. They advertise it as the thing, the mesh that'll make it feel like you're using use again, even though you're not. And that's a lofty claim, But I think it's true. If you're a good stringer, or you know someone that's a good stringer, and you have a pocket that you used to use with 2 U's in it or 1 U in it, and like, oh, I kind of want to have it be like this, the Vortex Mesh kind of does that work for you. If you have a pattern you like that you're already used to playing without U's, the Vortex Mesh works for that as well. My recommendation is to not do anything funky with the sidewalls, just single over-unders, not too many stacks either, because the X's in the middle of the mesh, they don't bag, but they're wider and they accommodate the ball and hug the ball better than the 10 diamonds. I really liked it. I guess I really did.
We should, before we go too far, explain what Vortex Mesh is, and what makes it different than just regular Hero Mesh.
Okay, so Vortex Mesh is standard 10 diamonds construction for the first 4.5 rows of the diamonds at the top, and two and a half to three diamonds in on the sides is all 10 diamond, the same diamond size. Where that changes is 4.5 diamonds down, 2.5 diamonds on the sides in, is it's similar to a 6 diamond construction, and the diamonds get larger. When you make the pocket, there's a little bit more give there, and it adds a little more whip, a little more hold to your release, depending on where you string the pocket. You still string your stick relatively normal. Like I said, I think a tiny tweak is usually needed if your pattern is complicated. But basically, those diamonds give you a little bit more grip on the ball. And I know a lot of companies say that. A lot of companies are like, oh, our mesh grips the ball. But like, no, man. This stuff changes that. And it doesn't change how you throw necessarily. You don't have to change that. But it'll help shooting because it'll hold the ball in your sweet spot for the release longer than regular mesh will, no matter what.
Right. It'll slow down the release.
Right. Hold, release, whip. All those things are very connected.
That's kind of the whether it comes to traditional or like the choice of 10 diamond versus 6 diamond, that's kind of always been the thing, is bigger diamonds is more hold, and better feel when you're like cradling with it, but smaller diamonds create a smoother, better release.
Right. And this is the perfect blend of both worlds. I was a 6 diamond guy all through college. I don't know what you played with, if you were a 6 diamond dude or whatnot. But 6 diamond is great for hold and giving you a little bit more, you know, the less connection points on the ball, the more hold or whip or whatever you want to call it, the slower the ball is going to come out, right? So the less connection points you have, the faster it'll come out. But it'll also give you that little – that
– No, you mean more. The more connections you have, the faster
it'll come out. Right, exactly. Sorry. But yeah, this stuff is – you know, especially after my rant, it was like my rant was almost perfectly timed to be like, hey, Kyle, you're an idiot. Check this mesh out. Which I think was also a comment they put on my Instagram when I posted that I just bought Vortex Mesh. It was just ha 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 by ACD Lax. So,
oh, yeah, I think it was. That was pretty amusing.
That was pretty good. At least they're good sports about it, and they know that, you know, sometimes I get carried away. But this stuff is great, man. If you're a shooter, this stuff is gold, especially with all the rules transitioning over, from high school as well now with three straights and no U's.
That's been the case. The rule that's changing or that's coming is going to be, the head specs.
Right.
But that leads into, I guess kind of my take on this situation is I feel like East Coast, the best analogy for East Coast Die sort of as a company is, in a lot of ways, I feel like they're like Apple, like during the peak when they were like dropping the iPhone and the iPad, is that they maybe aren't the first one to do it, or in most cases they aren't, but they're the first one to do it well and to get everybody to use it. Because the idea of like different diamond sizes or like bigger diamonds on the bottom half and smaller diamonds on the top half, like that's been done before.
Yes.
But I feel like it never caught on, or people have done, think they call it, like, trad-meshional, where you do, like, mesh on the top half, traditional on the bottom half, and things like that. People have kind of been toying with this basic concept for years now, but nobody ever did it well, and it never caught on.
Right.
And this seems like... I mean, I haven't... Unlike you, I have not gone out and purchased any yet. It seems like this has the potential to kind of change that and be, whether it's actually better or if they're just better at marketing it, you know, it's the first time such a product is going to get widespread adoption.
I mean, I'm a stringer and a player, and I can tell you right now it's better. I believe in it. Like, I don't really, and like I said earlier about the Centric, I don't like really, like, believe in products unless I use them and like them. Like, I even, like, when I wrote that review for... the New Balance Freeze cleats, and it was a very positive review, and that's because I genuinely loved wearing them. I genuinely like the product, and in lacrosse, that's very rare. You see a lot of seeders putting out positive reviews of stuff they don't actually like. I know for a fact that some seeders just post pictures of it and, like, say, you know, have a template for, like, I like this about it. It was good. I like this. It was good as well. You know, that kind of thing is going on. I don't do that, even though I'm the gear editor and there's pressure on me to do that. I don't feel like that's fair. So when I'm telling you my opinion, it could vary person to person. As a shooter, someone that likes the ball to sit in the middle of the pocket, release under a shooting string, this is great. A little higher in the head, but also giving me a little extra on the cradle. I really enjoy it, and I look forward to using it in my sticks for the near future. So if you're into that kind of concept, or you want to try something new, or you're looking at new mesh, I mean, $25 is $25. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's, you know, the best bang for your buck you're going to get, but I enjoyed it. I liked it. It was different, but it was also different with an eye towards innovation, which I really appreciate, because a lot of companies are like, oh, well, this is innovative. We made our head out of plastic that flexes when you shoot. No, that's code for we made a head and the plastic isn't stiff enough. It doesn't have a catapult effect. Okay, that's not a real thing.
Other, it's been done, like, other heads have done it before. We're just advertising it. We're not the first ones to do it. We're the first ones to advertise it as better.
Right, right. And this ties into, you know, the performance aspects. Like, companies say a lot of things, a lot of superlatives on their own products to push them, and that is their right. Sometimes they're not right. Sometimes they are. And that's why we're getting into our next section of gear. And I know,
No, you're not, I have,
you wanted to transition?
I have another point to make, but we're kind of out of time because you just kind of repeated yourself a bunch. But, the other thing is, I think this is, an additional product. Something people said about the Warp, that it, in a way, was getting around the shooting string rules by the U rules, by just sort of creating them in the mesh itself, rather than having them be a separate shooting string. And I feel like this, essentially what you're talking about, that it replicates the feeling of use, is this is just another such product, and potentially why I guess I wouldn't be opposed to undoing that rule and allowing use once again.
Yeah, I don't think use are bad. I think, I don't know if I've made this clear on the podcast, but it's definitely been clear in my writing. I don't agree with any of these stick regulations. I think they're stupid. I think they're put on by old dudes in a room that, you know, back in my day, we didn't have pockets and we all played with traditional and we had no offset. Like, I don't care. Like, I just don't think that's the Evo. There's a reason people still love the Evo Pro and the original blade. You know, it's not because they let you cheat. It's because they actually liked playing with it. And it doesn't make you, a stick doesn't make you better or worse, man. It really doesn't.
Right. I guess, no, I don't mind making them, getting rid of the pinch. I like that rule, making sticks have to be wider. The face shape have to be a little bit wider. But I just think the getting rid of the use, it was, and in some ways, perhaps the regulations forced this innovation to happen. And it maybe isn't, like, sort of in the long run, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I just think at a certain point, you're just making it more expensive by forcing people to adopt these more expensive workarounds to get around the rule.
Sure. I mean, nothing's a substitute for practice, though. You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not to disagree with that, but I just wanted to make that point before we move on. But the next thing that we're going to do, we're going to talk about is, we kind of teased it last time, that we're going to talk about, and you put one together, I did not, if you could combine different aspects of heads to make your perfect head, what would you pick to do so? So do you want to start? Let's start with the top and work our way down. So,
yeah.
What is the scoop that you like best?
See, this is it's definitely an STX scoop, and I don't know exactly what head I would pull it from. Part of me that played with it wants to say the original Proton scoop, because it was so great for picking up ground balls, and it was so great for, you know, the forward cam was so great for lean, you know, getting that fake lean to get the ball and kind of whack it out of the way or pick it up right away. But I'm going to go with the Stallion 700 scoop. I really like it. It's not super innovative. People are saying it's like crazy innovative to like have it to hide the top string, so they don't get frayed. Like, you know, people have been doing that forever, but the rounded part of it that makes contact with the ground before you scoop the ball is the perfect kind of rounding, where it's not too circular. It's a little oval-like. There's no point to it. I hate scoops with points, which is one thing I do not like about the Centric U. It has a pointed scoop a little bit on a certain.
Are you talking about a point from the perspective of face shape? Or from the perspective of
angle,
like if you're slicing the scoop, like in looking at it down the axis.
No. I mean the tip. So like the very top of the head that you go down and scoop the ball with has a rounded or beveled edge as opposed to a sharp edge. I would prefer a rounded. Okay.
You're talking about like the
oval edge.
You're talking about like the lip.
Yeah, the lip. Yeah, sure.
Rather than the face shape.
Yes.
If that's, I guess.
So I would go with a modern STX.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Or an old STX head. I really just enjoy those scoops more than any other scoop that I've used as a player.
Okay. Then we go with, do you want to get face shape?
Ooh, face shape. I'm going to go with my favorite head of all time, which is the Evo 2nd Gen Evolution, Warrior Evolution 2nd Gen. Face shape, which has a very, compared to modern heads, very traditional shape, but a kind of a thicker throat, and a little bit of a flare kind of closer to the scoop, which I'm a fan of. So that would definitely be my face shape. So I wouldn't use an X-Spec. Like I'm
okay. Well, I feel like you got to go since every, you gotta pick an, at least pick an X-Spec one as well.
All right, Evo 4.
Okay,
so that's my X-Spec.
And I feel like that's, pick. And I feel like that's a good choice. That I feel like when you talk about like it being a little bit more traditional, I feel like in some ways, face shapes are traditional because the Evo is what it set the standard for face shape, and it created the tradition.
Yeah, it's hard to say no to a classic, man. And the original Evolution
It's a classic for a reason, though.
Yeah.
And I think the face shape is foremost among the reasons why the Evo line is still around.
Right. What's next? Throat?
I would say, no, if we went top to bottom, like bottom rail shape, side, like the sidewall shape.
I would go with the offset from the Centric U, but I would go with the sidewall design from the Evo 2. Yes.
Okay.
That's what I would
do. That makes sense. So like the sidewall braces of the Evo 2.
The struts would be the Evo 2 side, because they're a little lower and it allowed for a lot more flex at the top of the head when you shot. Like a natural flex, not like a advertised flex. Like if you strung your pocket where the flare is, it let you have a kind of an increased little snap off the plastic, especially if you didn't have your top string a little tight, which I do now, but didn't used to. So I enjoy that. Quick, good one-handed cradle, mid offset. Just the ability to get the ball out and in as fast and as powerful as possible.
Okay. I think neck, yeah, is the throat all that's left? Or is there another?
Yeah, throat. I guess throat, that means the least important part, right? Like, who cares what the throat of the head looks like?
Until it breaks.
Yeah, until it breaks. So I would stay away from a lot of the modern heads, and I would go with another classic here. I would go with the edge throat. Yeah, I would. Because it's just a box with some holes in it. I don't like the jewel stuff. I don't like how that looks, and I don't like the minimal design with all these cutouts and stuff. I'd just rather have a really solid bottom-weighted head. Just so when I know it's going to be there when I one-handed cradle, I don't have to creep up to the plastic. I can just feel it on the shaft. So I would go with the edge, original edge, OG edge, throat design for sure.
Okay. Do you have, one other, I don't know if you thought about this, throwing you for a loop here. Do you have a favorite throat sort of locking mechanism? Ooh. Can you, like, is it the plug of the, of the dual, maybe the new, what is it? The throat lock of the lock warrior throat. Heads or the lock throat, that piece of plastic in there or,
double screw holes.
I have not tried it yet. Well, the new one, double screw holes. Or you can do a screw hole in the front. Was there a head that ever did that?
Mostly side.
I don't know. But,
the original Highwall did it from the side.
Okay. I don't know if you've tried it. In the new String King head, the bolt that goes all the way through.
Yeah, I mean those are all good ideas.
Or just the classic, just the regular old screw.
Yeah, I'm gonna give my little tip for this to eliminate head rattle, because I'm one of those people that hates head rattle. I like all these new technologies,
there's not one of those people. Like, that's all.
Okay. All people hate that. So my remedy for that,
is there anybody who likes head rattle?
If you do, tweet at us. And so we can retweet.
Joe Spallina, I think, tried to make fun of me when I made a joke about people's opinions being wrong by Sarket. Like, but this is a case where if that's your opinion, like, it's,
yeah,
it's
man,
wrong.
He's not happy with you. We can talk about that later.
No,
if you
well,
want.
He.
All right. So my answer for this is, okay, if you're looking to eliminate head rattle, take a piece of tape about 3 inches, like athletic tape, 3 inches long, and put it over the top of the opening, and kind of like smooth it down on the sides, and then jam your head onto the top of it. Okay, so like it's going to take a little while to get it in there. But if the friction, then the grip that's caused from the tape being adhered to the shaft and giving that extra layer between that and the head makes it a much more secure connection. And then you put the screw in and you're good to go. That's the best setup. It doesn't last forever, but it's much better than any other company putting out any of these other technologies. I'm telling you, it's the best. Try that out. Trust me. That works. So I would go single screw hole with a piece of tape.
Okay. And I think that concludes it, right? Is there any other comments?
No, I mean, it's funny because, like, it's a fun exercise to do by yourself if you're a gearhead. Like, just be like, what do I like? You know, I think a lot of players aren't sure, and that comes with, obviously, a lot of years. I'm an old man. It comes with a lot of experience, but it also comes with preference and knowing your play style, and that grows and wanes as you age and get older and become better as a player and practice more. There are things you want in your stick. You want the stick to provide for you. So, I mean, it's a good exercise to think about, and there's trade-offs with every stick, and that's the kind of the point of the exercise is, what trade-off are you willing to make versus what are you not willing to make? Oh, also, I would have my stick made of whatever the command is made of, the Under Armour command, because that is great plastic.
Oh, that's another good one.
Great plastic on that. I like stiffer heads that, you know, break in. So I would definitely use the Under Armour plastic or maybe the STX ACP plastic. And I would want 19 string holes. No more, no less. 19. I don't want 80.
Not 30.
I don't want 80 or whatever.
Like the new string king
this
head.
New string king head looks like it has 80 holes on it. And I saw that head, and I'm not gonna lie to you. I just got scared. I was like, I'm gonna have to string that. Oh my god, what am I gonna do?
The logical conclusion, though, of it, if more holes is good, the most holes is the best.
I know. But honestly, it's daunting, man. I've seen it in person, and I kind of looked at it and been like, oh no. Oh man. I mean, I think that about most new heads that aren't remakes of older heads. I'm just like, oh no. I gotta learn a new pattern for this. Oh, all right. Fine. That kind of thing. So, yeah. I mean, maybe we'll get our hands on some and see how they work out. But.
Okay. The next thing, this is hopefully going to be a short segment. We'll see what kind of devil's advocate Kyle is going to play about this. But and it's a question that after the NLL article last week on secondary assists on stats that someone asked me again. And it's a question that I feel like I get asked not all the time, but on a regular basis. And in a lot of cases, it's from coaches, which is basically the advanced stat thought is, how do I come up with like a plus minus system for lacrosse that everybody wants? They keep track of it in hockey and in basketball, and everybody sort of wants some kind of like relatively easy, like generic rating system for lacrosse. And the reason that we don't have one is because there's either fundamental problems with anyone you come up with, or it just doesn't work. And I want to take a moment to explain why. But does that make sense? Do you follow what
I get
abstract,
it. I have my
concept
thoughts.
I'm trying to describe?
I have my thoughts, but I'll wait for you to describe. They might be the same. I don't know.
And the fundamental problem is substitution patterns. Is that basically nearly every team is going to play the same three starting attackmen for the entire game or most of the game, and the same three close defenders for the entire game or most of the game. And so the problem is, no matter how you do it, whether you assign certain points for, like, minus points for a turnover, like, plus points if a goal is scored when everybody's on the field, however you do it, or if you look at efficiency rating, for most teams, all of your attackmen are going to have the exact same rating because they're all on the field for all the same possessions. Or similarly with your defenders. In most cases, your close defenders are all going to have the exact same rating because they're playing almost every defensive possession, at least some of them. The one group that it might work for is midfielders, but to a certain extent, you have a problem because sometimes there's problems created on the defensive end by offensive midfielders who subbed off the field and left guys in bad situations who just ran onto the field. So there's kind of some big flaws any way that you attempt to go about doing it. Okay. Is that repeating, or is that what you thought?
And again, I think my only contention would be that plus minus would only be valuable for midfielders. Every other piece of information that could be gleaned from plus minus for defenders and attackmen can be gleaned from, you know, either team stats for defense or individual point totals for attackmen.
For attackmen, it could be a case where like a guy sets great off ball picks, or he does some intent. He's great at getting at, like, seeing plays developing and taking his defender out of the way so other guys can score. There are searching for some kind of way to quantify those intangibles is not, I don't know, I guess I, it's, it would be worthwhile if we could do it. There's just not a good way to be able to do it.
I think the practical application is not individual plus minus per se, but a half field versus half field plus minus, if that makes sense. So half field on the defensive side and half field on the offensive side, and then kind of put them against the team you're playing against. But that's not really applicable to all situations, right?
I would say the way I would go about it, if you're interested in that, is I would look at efficiency ratings, but I would use a modification where you look at basically count clears. Don't count defensively. Don't count a possession as having ended until you successfully clear the ball. Okay. And on for offense, don't count the possession of ending until the other team successfully clears it
or scores.
So or that turns way, it over. That way you. Wait, say it again.
Or they score or turn it over.
Well, no, but a turnover, the team would have to clear it. So, like, if you're trying to evaluate like attackmen or like offensive midfielders, right. you don't want to incorporate clearing because like your attackmen aren't really part of the clear. But you do want to incorporate riding.
Sure.
So what you do is you look at it, look at every time that the team gets... So you don't count failed clears against them as a wasted possession and reward them when they successfully ride the ball back. Instead of counting that as two possessions, count it as one.
Right, but so you can just get that information every time you from get other stats. Offense. Like, creating... Right. Using plus minus and lacrosse is just creating the data, you know, given to you by other statistics. It's not like those other sports you mentioned where it helps you evaluate the player contribution because so much of lacrosse is played in the six. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's more, it has to do with the substitution.
Right. That too. So it's a combo.
Like in hockey, you have guys who are like, guys are only playing a third of the game at most and they're constantly changing. So they're going up against different lines on the other team in different situations. And they're out there on offense and defense. And same thing in basketball, like the lineups are constantly changing and guys are in with different players and against different players all the time. Right. So looking at what happens just when they're on the court or on the ice makes sense. But like in lacrosse, if you look at, well, what happens for Brown when Dylan Malloy's on the field on offense? Well, everything, because they never take him out of the game except when he's hurt or they're ahead by 12 goals in the fourth quarter. So it doesn't tell you anything about Dylan Malloy independent of the Brown offense.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. You have fixed positions for, you know, in hockey, your defense and box lacrosse, even your defenders are going up and coming off. And in basketball, it's the same people going up and coming off. So that metric has some kind of evaluation property for that player. But in lacrosse, like if you're an attackman and you're always on the field, you're just on one half of the field. So if you're measuring against other people off, that's not gonna.
But that's not,
not gonna work.
No, that's not the fundamental problem though. Like if teams rotated their attackmen like constantly, and they're close defenders, you could figure it out.
Right, but no one does that.
And it would be based only on the half, like you're saying, like that's the half field data. But like you could come up with a metric. But that's the problem is it that no one rotates them enough, so you don't get like that kind of quasi random sampling of different guys with different guys up against different guys.
Right.
Okay. And that's something that it's not something I ever was going to write about because I feel like it's just not important enough, but wanted to put it out there and explain to people. The next thing that I think we wanted to talk about was. The NLL launched their new, or they certainly announced launching a new, but they unveiled what your streaming options are going to be to catch NLL games for the 2017 season. And it's their own site. So they're not outsourcing it to another streaming service. They're creating their own, and it's based on a technology from a company called Sports Rocket, which does kind of like the back end video services for different companies. I believe they power a portion of the Big Ten Network's online content, in addition to a couple other sites. Do you have a take on it, Kyle?
I have to pay for it, right?
Yeah, I want to say it's $35 for the entire season and $25 for a single team.
I gotta pay for it. I'm out. Sorry,
you're not gonna expense it into lacrosse as a work expense.
I mean, I could. That's what I do for LSN, but I don't cover box. You know, like I feel like this is just another example of drawing a line. You know, deep. The line's already been drawn like years ago, but really digging into the line between NLL and MLL. And I, as everyone knows, I clearly fall on the side of MLL. I don't have a choice. I'm not going to go all of a sudden go cover NLL, and especially if I have to pay for it. I mean, I think it's a deterrent, if I'm honest, but that's because I'm firmly entrenched in the other
right, game. But I mean, but putting together the streaming site isn't free, so it's not, it doesn't make sense for them to spend money so that you can watch the games, because that's losing money, and that's not really a good business model.
Wait, pro lacrosse leagues losing money is not a good model? What? This is news. We're breaking news right
is
now.
Is it?
No, it's not.
Oh. But I think what you said, though, is a good point, and it reminds me that I feel like I was the first person to kind of point out on Twitter that this means, and I think it's the first time, because the NLL didn't really have their own streaming service. They have in the past, but they didn't last year. Everything was through Fox Sports Go or ESPN3, where all the games were streamed. So it's the first time, and with the creation of LSN last year, it was the first time that the MLL had their own streaming service to show all the games. This now kind of marks the first time that both leagues have gone with their own, but separate, kind of on in-house streaming options as the primary way to watch games.
Yes.
And other people, other people, I'm pretty sure, there's no real evidence, but I'm pretty sure read my tweet and then tweeted things influenced by that, but kind of misinterpreted it. And I think, as you pointed out, like, this isn't news that the NLL wasn't going to be streamed on the same place as the MLL. Right. That happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
That decision was sort of made when the MLL decided to launch LSN.
Sure.
So it never was an option that was ever on the table.
Definitely not, considering who owns LSN. It was never an option.
Right. Right, and I think it's sort of one fundamental flaw, I think, with LSN being run by the MLL, is that it was never, it's was always going to do things that were in what the MLL's interests were first, and not potentially finding a way to compromise and work together with other people in the lacrosse industry, in the lacrosse world, to kind of create what, you know, a central video streaming service that kind of catered to everything.
Right. It's not going to happen. Too far apart. Leagues are too far apart.
No, well, but it would take, if it was going to happen, it would either have to be created as a joint cooperation, or I'd say more likely just done and backed by some third party.
Right.
That then could cut a deal with both leagues. As part of it, or work with
like
Colin,
Amazon,
you know, whatever,
right?
To put together,
like Amazon.
Yeah, yes, for like Amazon, for example. Though I do wonder if this. I feel like this at least though gives us some information on what a potential Amazon deal would look like for the NLL, at least one that would take effect for 2017.
Sure.
And that it wouldn't be a case where Amazon is paying for exclusive streaming rights and basically trying to get all those NLL fans who might have forked over the $35 for the season streaming package to fork over, I don't know, what, $100 for Amazon Prime. Yeah. It would instead be just a way of trying to get people who already pay for Amazon Prime to start using the video service.
Sure. And also the thing that makes the most amount of sense. I mean, we were pretty dismissive last week on MLL doing an Amazon deal in light of that Wall Street Journal article. But I think our main point is that you're never going to see exclusive rights on Amazon. You might see Game of the Week kind of thing on there from NLL and MLL.
Well,
but
even,
you're not going to see
even,
exclusive
I mean,
only because they've built now both leagues have built this, you know, they pay for production costs. You know, they're paying for to film the game. You know, they're putting up all this money on the front end to make it on the back end from subscription services, right?
Right. I think though, as long as the NLL is getting money from Amazon, like in money that they might not have gotten otherwise, there's no reason for the NLL to want to limit it to like a game of the week,
right?
Because if the NLL can increase the audience, I mean, and is getting money from Amazon, you know, for every, like, on a pay-per-view basis or you know, for every user who watches, you know, a certain, like, a game, that they're getting some money. Because it increases, the increased viewers means increased ad revenue potential.
Yeah, but the algorithms for that aren't known. You know, Netflix algorithms for stuff like that are the best kept secret in Hollywood. So I don't think it's any different with sports. I think that the reason it would be Game of the Week and not full rights is because, you know, Amazon would only pay X amount to NLL and MLL. And they definitely, now that this has happened, they can't pay one lump sum to both. So they'd have to split up their cost for them personally. So the good thing about these services, what I'm saying is the good thing about both leagues having this service is they have their own production company to launch this, right? If you don't have your own production company or production arm, you can't launch a streaming service. So both leagues have a production company.
Haven't they always had that, though?
Not always.
Like, haven't both leagues always kind of run the production of
I'm
the
not
games,
an always
even when they were streamed?
That's not true. Recently, okay. Yes. Or, like, in recent years, yeah. That is true, but that is not an always statement.
Okay.
So
that's the, yes. I shouldn't say always without knowing. Yeah. Without knowing
one of
more,
the
but,
one of the reasons that MLL lost kind of their. You know, and we say game of the week, but game or two a week on CBS is because they wanted CBS Sports to pay for some of the production costs. And CBS Sports was like, no, we're not gonna. So then, you know, you see it knocked down to they have the semifinals, the All-Star game, and the finals on CBS Sportsnet. So that's kind of how that
right.
happens is production still costs money. Still costs money to pay the talent on air, the camera guy, the other camera guy. The producer of the game, all that stuff costs money. So and it's more than you think it is. So the fact that both these leagues have the infrastructure to create the production is actually more news than the having them be behind a paywall. So if they're stable enough to fund
That's a good point. But I guess speaking of pro lacrosse, I think the other big news, and I forget, I think it happened, it broke after we recorded the last week's podcast. But it was announced that the Machine are building their own. Well, they're not building. They have partnered with a city just south of Columbus to build a new stadium that's going to be designed around pro lacrosse. And I think are they sharing? Is it a rugby team?
It's not just one team. It's like an organization
that
helps with several other teams. Right?
Okay, no, but I thought the anchor, like, they're building a new stadium, and the anchor tenants are going to be the Machine and there's another sports team. Now, either way, it's like rugby or ultimate frisbee or something.
There's ultimate frisbee
it is,
teams? Really? Is that a thing?
I think there's like a semi-pro league. I don't know if it's – I don't know how big it is, but yeah, there's places where people are really into Ultimate Frisbee.
That is wild. That is news to me, and that is wild. But okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Like, it's big in Madison, Wisconsin. It's a big Ultimate Frisbee hotbed.
Wow.
I know. There's some really, like, just in like the, like, local, like, you know, like, Madison, like, adult co-ed Ultimate Frisbee League. Like, there's some really, really good Ultimate Frisbee players.
Yeah, it's the Ohio Aviators of PRO rugby.
There we go. I was right. Yes. It was rugby. Okay. Right. I shouldn't say I was right. I was my first guess was right. I guess so. We're going to talk about what is. In terms of, I mean, this is definitely positive news for the league. But I guess the question is how big of good news is this?
It's a 6,500 seat stadium. So that's what, like a big high school football stadium? Or not big by me, not by you.
I was going to say, like, that's probably like a... relatively, like, that's a good size high school football stadium in Ohio, but
it's
like,
not big.
I wouldn't be I'm sure somebody in Ohio has a bigger high school football stadium. I mean, that's what is that, like, that's like the small high school size in Texas.
Yeah, everybody in Texas is like laughing at 6,500 right now.
I don't know that everybody's laughing. It just depends on how big your like the town is, but there are definitely some that laugh at 6,500.
Sure.
But I guess, but how much was having stadiums not designed for pro lacrosse holding back the
MLS? I don't think it was. I think that's such a BS statement. I really do. Like, I don't think that the size of your stadium makes you look worse as a team. I people say that about Harvard a lot, because like for the Cannons games, you can only sit on half of the sides, right? The other half is kind of like roped off, and they don't offer seating on it. But they still sell. They still, you know, are tops in the league in attendance. Like, what do you want them to do? You know, I think the problem with this is that it's 6,500. I mean, not that the Ohio Machine have been drawing 6,500, but Boston certainly draws 8,000. You know, Denver draws close to that.
Denver's tricky though, because so many of them are in the July 4th game.
Yeah, but they still draw pretty well. Almost is my point. They draw more than 6,500,
right? Right. Yeah,
or around that number.
That's probably fair. But they average like 9,000 to 10,000, but like a good. That the July 4th game is responsible for like 3,000 or 4,000 of those that per game attendance.
Okay, well, either way, the ability to have that game is what boosts the attendance. So if you're limited by 6,500,
right? No, that's true.
You know, Ohio has a lot of ticket sales.
Like,
you know, so I think
selling 30,000 tickets at, you know, 10 or 15, 20 bucks a piece is, you know, that's no joke in terms of revenue.
Absolutely not. And I think that people that complain about, you know, MLO not being in the right stadiums are looking at the wrong complaint. I think location matters a lot. And I think that, fan service, like how you treat, the people that come in and what you offer them outside of the game or also during the game is a big part of, fan satisfaction. So, and that's a thing that a good PR team and a good events team can overcome. And I think we'll see what happens with that in Ohio. I think Ohio wouldn't do this if they weren't prepared to make the other moves. I know one of the problems that they had in the past is that they couldn't sell beer. And I don't think you're partnering with a rugby team if you can't sell beer, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, I mean, that's part of the reason. I think they're going to have influence on that stadium. It's a pro stadium, so you're not limited by what the college that's hosting you wants to put down as rules. Potentially just they didn't necessarily have the capacity to sell beer or whatever in the stadium if it wasn't built into the concessions, right, or whatever. I guess that's an obstacle to be overcome. Never mind. That's silly. I think you're definitely if you're trying, part of the reason like to do this is so that you can set the policy on things like selling beer.
Right.
But I think you brought up an important point when you talk about location, and that's what I am interested to see with this new stadium. Because I didn't. The town that it's in is called. It's called Obetz, right? And it's a town that, despite having lived in Ohio for most of my life, it's a town I had never heard of. But it's basically right just south of Columbus. And that, if you are familiar with Columbus sort of lacrosse geography, you'll know there aren't any lacrosse teams down there at the high school level. The really sort of the hot spots of Columbus lacrosse are the north suburbs. That, like, Upper Arlington is northwest of town. Dublin's like is just on the other side of Upper Arlington. Worthington is due north of the city. Westerville is kind of the northeast suburb. And you go up, there's like Olentangy Liberty is sort of due north of the city. Ohio Wesleyan is in Delaware, which is, I would call it like it's like an exurb of Columbus, just north of the city. And there's, like, you know, Delaware Hayes is a very solid team. Is right there. That you had a lot of different high schools who are kind of like where lacrosse players sort of in the area, and now you've moved the team to the other side of the city from all of those players. And I am curious to see how that impacts their attendance.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know, not an Ohio native. I'm sure if that happened in New Hampshire, I would have a similar opinion if it was far away from a bunch of stuff. But I will present this point. So you're saying these places are all 20 to 45 minutes away, the hotbeds?
Yeah, I would say I think I did a little bit of Google Maps searching, and it's not so much that I think Upper Arlington and Pickerington are the closest spots, and Google Maps has their high schools as over a 20-minute drive from the stadium right. location.
I mean, here's my thing with that. I don't really think that's super negative because I grew up not having to drive a half hour to go do anything. You know? So, like, I grew up in the sticks.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like,
well, I mean,
for certain people, that's going to be a problem. For certain people, it's not. And I think we'll see what the concentration is. I mean, it's not like the Ohio Machine were killing it on attendance anyway. But I think having their own stadium, you know, if they offer the right fan experience, which is key, not just the team being good, which, by the way, the team is very good. That also helps. Then we'll see what happens.
Oh, and they're entertaining. Like, you have some not just good, they're entertaining. That, you know, Marcus Holman, Tom Schreiber, Peter Baum, Kyle Harrison. Like, you got some entertaining guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's going to go a long way. I'm optimistic. I think I'm pretty optimistic about this move. The one thing that gives me the most optimism is that the league didn't kick in any money to make this happen. So Ohio is going to control a lot of this, which is good.
It's also, I think the city is putting up a lot
That's
of
good.
Money.
That's good. It's a community effort then. It's not a, you know, regime-driven effort, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. I just mean, that I think you can't necessarily, like, you can't necessarily assume that the machine are going to have a lot of control. Because I'm not sure that the money, I'm not sure that a lot of the money is coming from the machine.
Well, as long as the league office is not controlling it, I'm happy.
Right, yeah. The league office, as far as I can tell, has nothing to do with it.
I had direct contact. that was the first thing I asked.
Questions.
I was like, wait a minute. Where'd you get this money? How you doing this? But it looks all above board, and hopefully it works out. 6,500 might be the right amount of people. I don't know. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's nice. As long as if they manage to start filling that up, there's potential for expansion in the future. If they could bring in temporary bleachers for the other side, or like let people, you know, stand around the field or something. I'm sure there's a way to pack more people in there if they needed to. Or they could find a way if they needed to. That is about more or less what kind of the top MLL teams are drawing. So if they could get to that number, I think that would be a good, and it'd create a fun atmosphere if it kind of had a sold out type feeling.
Yeah, that's always fun. I didn't mean to disparage that by saying that that's not the league's problem, but you know, having a packed stadium is great no matter how many people are there. I'm just saying that it's not the breaker. You know, it's not the breaking point of a measure of success for a team. And I think teams have different levels of success. I think if the machine brought in 5,000 people, it'd be a resounding success for them per game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, yes. I mean, they went from, they're one of, I think of the nine MLL teams, I think they're either three or four of them were drawing less than 2,000 fans a game.
Yeah, and I think if they got up to, I think a very successful year for them in 2017 with the stadium is 4,000 fans, and I think that's doable.
I think that's
very doable.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I mean, the other thing is that it is further from like some of those suburbs, but it is closer to, it is fairly close to kind of downtown,
right?
And where a lot of people live, if you're trying to attract maybe, and this is potentially too where the league potentially needs to be going, is maybe not so much just attracting, you know, youth players and parents from the suburbs, but also getting like, you know, some young professionals, some, you know, like recent Ohio State grads who are in their 20s, who are kind of living and working in Columbus to start coming out.
Maybe
to
get
games.
some rugby fans to check it out too. I mean, we know that soccer
right,
and lacrosse fans
well.
Don't work because of Rochester, but whatever. Shots at Rochester. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, no, maybe. And that's another good thing about sharing the stadium, though, that I guess I hadn't thought of, is that, yeah, you have some good cross-promotional opportunities. Like, you could do, you know, in terms of your ticket office, you know, maybe offer a slightly discounted package if you buy lacrosse and rugby season tickets.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to do that. I'm optimistic. I'm not I don't think it's that bad. Yeah, I think it's great news to report, and hopefully it works out for them. I want every team to succeed. I know that's not possible, but...
For sure. No, I just... When I talk about them moving away from kind of the lacrosse... the heavy lacrosse areas of Columbus, I don't necessarily... I'm not trying to imply by any means that it's a bad thing or that it's going to be a negative move for them. It's just, I think that is a concern. And if it does not work out if the new stadium does not work out, that is potentially one of the causes.
Sure.
And I think it's an interesting experiment, for kind of MLL data in terms of how does it work. Well, you talked about, is it really about the stadium experience compared to how close it is to, you know, high school lacrosse players?
Yeah. I think it's odd. It's odd being the optimist. I don't really know what that's like. That's kind of weird for me.
I feel like I'm
You live there.
It's not that I'm not optimistic. You live there and you're not optimistic. No. It's that I feel like I'm trying to bring you the local knowledge.
Yeah. And my read on that is that you're not optimistic. But I could be wrong.
No, I think I would say that I am optimistic. I'm also kind of upset because it's like an hour further drive for me compared to where their old stadium was.
Okay.
So, like, Ohio Wesleyan's like a 2-hour drive for me, and now this new stadium's like a 3-hour drive.
Ooh, yikes.
Which kind of makes going down there for the day, like just for the night for a game, a little bit more of an investment. But in the end, I'm only one person.
Yeah, but your lax film room, and that's what matters.
That's true. I guess
that was a joke. Time to end the podcast, Patrick.
I know.
Time to end it. End it.
I know. It's been time to end the podcast, I think, for like 5 minutes.
It's all good.
We just kept going. I am Patrick McEwen, a.k.a. the Lax Film Room guy. You can follow me on Twitter or Snapchat at Lax Film Room, or on Instagram or YouTube at Lacrosse Film Room.
I am Kyle Zevitt. I am the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse. You can find me on Twitter at @TheKyleDevitt and on Instagram @TheKyleDevitt, where I am posting several stringings as of late. So check up on that.
We will talk to you next week, guys.